everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food producers and food consumers. It's that day of the week. It's cold enough to have that J.C. Cole on. Cole. I never thought about it, even though it's spelled differently. Cole is the key. Life is powered by coal. I completely digress. Coming to us from an undisclosed location in New Jersey. Outside of Newark, New Jersey, somewhere. How's JC? You're bundled up for a cold winter.
I am getting ready for a cold winter, yes. And so we're keeping the heat a little bit on the low side right now in this part of the house, just because I didn't want to cut all the extra wood at the moment.
You know, you wouldn't have to go to the gym and do cardiovascular workouts as often if you would just go out there and chop some wood.
Well, the chopping part is correct, but I don't chop. I actually sit in a tractor. I mean, this is not exactly what I call cardiovascular exercise.
Yeah, I suppose.
I set my tractor up with a very interesting thing. You know, it's a mid-sized Kubota, about 50 horsepower. And you can get an upside-down log splitter that goes on the front if you have hydraulics. Mm-hmm. So literally, I just pick up, grab the log with the front of the tractor and split it right there. I don't touch the log.
Yeah, there's zero cardiovascular benefit from that.
That's true. I mean, if turning the wheel a little bit to the right and turning the wheel a little bit to the left is exercise, I'm doing really well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, don't you at least get off and go pick up the split log and put it on a pile somewhere?
I'm an engineer. I figured out how not to. I have one of those landscaping trailers that's small, you know, it's, I don't know, about 15 feet by maybe 6 feet wide. Yeah. And I put it out there in the field and I pick up a like a 200-pound log. You know, we have an awful lot of ash here in New Jersey that's dead and seasoned. And I put the 200-pound log on the trailer and split it right there. So I don't even have to lift the log. And then I moved the trailer right to the outdoor wood burner.
Well, at least you hitch the horses to the log and drag it out of the woods. At least you do that before you get the tractor involved.
No.
All right. There's zero physical benefit to this conversation. Kelly and I were driving home from Thanksgiving last weekend. And we were talking about your and my discussions, which happen on a regular basis, about the collapse of the dollar. And I continue to tell people in my family, see, money in the bank is not an issue for us. Our money in the bank is all owed, not something we deposited. So it's not an issue. But I have family members that have money in the bank. And Kelly and I said, how real is this story where, you know, your money could just evaporate, be gone. There could be a collapse of the dollar. The bank could fail. And I said, well, this sounds like a J.C. Cole question because he was in Lafayette for 18 years. He saw where money wasn't as available as you thought it was. And so hearkening on your experiences in Lafayette, where do you see that we're at from a financial standpoint?
Well, I see we're in uncharted waters. That's one of the biggest problems. It's almost like we're trying to travel to a destination. We have no maps. Right.
So, I've done that actually.
Yeah. You know, and so you actually look, first of all, history is very clear. Fiat currencies collapse, right? The average age of a fiat currency in history, I think, is 30 years, and ours is well over the 30-year expiration date. Now, then, by the way, it doesn't mean a collapse. It looks more like a change in the value. In other words, a collapse may trigger, you know, your reptilian brain fight or flight or freeze. We don't want that. It's more like a metamorphosis. There's going to be a change in our exchange systems. So how do you protect yourself from that change? And what is it? Well, the first part is The majority of Americans do not know that they changed the banking laws. I think it was in 2014, where before that, if you deposited money in the bank, it was your money still.
Mm-hmm.
They changed the law where officially, and this was even the International Monetary Fund, so they did it to the Europeans too. Officially, when you put money in the bank, it is no longer your possession. It is the bank's possession.
Didn't we learn that a long time ago, JC? Ownership is nine tenths of ownership is possession.
Yes. But this is a little bit different. Legally now, it is their asset, and they just simply owe you that amount. Mm. So what that did was it changed the order of if a bank goes bankrupt, who gets paid first from its assets? And in the previous law, it would be the depositors would get paid. With the new law, the depositors at the bottom of the totem pole. And anybody can look that up, the change. So what that means is, first, if the bank goes bankrupt, first, other entities get paid before you. And of course, if it goes bankrupt, that means that it doesn't have all the assets needed for its liabilities. So the depositor is now the last person to get paid out, which generally is zero. Okay. The second part is most Americans think that, well, our money in the bank is insured, FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. That's a separate company. That's a private company. It's not the U.S. government. It's related to it, but it's not. And that they only have enough cash to cover maybe 1% of the deposits in the country. So if two big banks go down, the FDIC doesn't have enough money to cover it. Okay. So the concept that you have insurance is just a ploy, right? And if you're fortunate to have over, I think it's $200,000, well, anything over $200,000 isn't covered from the one bank that goes bankrupt, right? So if you have $1 million in cash in the bank, you lose $800,000 if insurance works. And the other thing that most people don't know, but I got to experience, is if you have money in the bank and the bank goes bankrupt and it is insured and the insurance works, the terms of the insurance are what they decide at that moment. So nice. This happened in Latvia. This happened in Latvia. Let's say you had $50,000 in the bank. The bank went bankrupt. The insurance kicks in. And they come to you and you say, okay, you have your choice. You can take $10,000 now, and that's it. That's the last of your claims. Or you can take $50,000 out, but over a period of 2 years. And this actually, I think, happened in, I think it was Argentina also, that they sit there and they say, make terms on, you know, what you think your money is and they make terms on which you can withdraw it. So again, you know, it's like, it's not in your control. All right. So that's just on the banks.
Let me ask you a question, because there's so many avenues we could go from here, but I want to get to this one before we run out of time on this segment. In my part of the world, I think that there is a degree of comfort that we deal with our locally owned bank, which are no longer do we have one bank in one town owned by one family, which used to be the way it was. Now we have more regional banks where they maybe have 7, 8, 12 branch locations, as opposed to dealing with one of those unnamed global banks that we hear about. So we feel like we have a degree of safety if we're working with that smaller regional bank.
Sometimes that's true. And it depends on how conservative the managers of the bank were and how much exposure they have to other, let's call it, assets and liabilities in the world. One of the biggest challenges we have is this thing called derivatives, which for most people is quite confusing. But the derivative exposure by some people, first, it's an unregulated market. So nobody knows. knows what the total is. But some pretty good finance guys have estimated that it could be up to $2 quadrillion in the world. And right there, we run into a problem that most people can't comprehend what that means. And so if you took 2.4 quadrillion and you divided it by 8 billion, okay, you would come out to a figure of 300,000.
Per person.
Right. Now, I didn't do that in my head. It took me a few minutes on paper. So, yes. So for every man, woman, and child on Earth, roughly, somebody created $300,000 worth of derivatives, which means it's a massive Ponzi scheme.
Just time enough to go to the website, lignite.com. Life powered by coal. More after this. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. We're going to get right back into this and pay tribute to thewalloffhonor.org. We'll do all of that after this conversation with continuing with J.C. Cole from New Jersey. My house yesterday morning, wind chill was 5 below, J.C. I'm headed to Bismarck today. I think it's like 10 below. So keep your coat handy. Maybe you ought to get out of the tractor and split a log or two by hand.
By the way, as a good prepper, I do have that ability. I do have the sledgehammers and the wedges and everything just in case.
Yeah.
And I also have, I started prepping years ago. And so every once in a while you go through some form of antique, flea market and you see one of those massive 6 foot, 2-man saws for like $15.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of those. And I pray I don't ever have to use them.
I have a saw that runs on a belt that still requires a tractor, but it's a saw that has a belt, and then your tractor has a belt, and it's a belt that's like, a foot, foot and a half wide. That thing will cut your arm or anything you put in there.
That part's true. So we might... we might have to go back to some of the older, mechanics, depending on what happens.
That's crazy.
Depending on what happens. So,
don't want to interrupt your derivatives discussion to make sure we got that Ponzi scheme settled.
Right. Okay. So let's give some wake up call to people. Our currency is controlled by a group of private bankers called the Federal Reserve Bank. First, they're not federal. It's not owned by the federal government, right? It's not a bank because it doesn't store any resources, so it has no reserves. And they control what our currency is, right? For over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
They've never been audited. Never. So we're using a currency system that nobody can tell you how much dollars is out there. It's never been audited. Do you go and buy a company that's never been audited? No, but we're using the currency. So now it's coming where basically the rest of the world, being led by China and Russia, are saying we no longer want to use your world reserve currency. Why? Because you've been skimming off the top for 100 years and we're sick of it. and of course, this won't be reported to the Americans. But the writing is on the wall. They're creating other currencies. They're backing their currencies with gold. It's kind of known as the BRICS nation, right? And that means that the world will not use our world reserve currency anymore. And the only place to spend it will be back here in America, which means basically hyperinflation. Right. So how do you protect yourself for that?
Funny thing is, I was going to ask you, so what's the answer?
Well, the answer is awareness, like everything else. And then how do you protect yourself against that? Well, mm-hmm. There's not one simple solution. Part of it is to try and make an estimate on what the new currency, Because the failure of the currency will just mean that something else replaces it. The new currency looks to be backed by silver and gold. So you can store some silver and gold. But like everything else, like preppers, don't put all your eggs in one basket. I knew I'd sneak the chicken stuff in. Right?
Hey, so, you have to have chickens if you want to be ready for this. I mean, that's just how it is. You maybe don't have to have access. Or you don't have to have the chickens that you go feed and gather eggs every day, but you better know where those chickens are. I talked to a friend last night who buys an egg product. And in the last 30 days, this egg product that he buys to put into an animal feed has gone from $3 a pound to $16 a pound.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's an attack on all sides of everything we need, on the food, on the fuel, on the electricity. I just read that, you know, New York has to prepare for substantially increased electric costs. A sharp rise in winter electric prices. And so this is coming. So one of the one of the most important areas is our exchange system, which is basically our currency. So some silver, some gold. I prefer more silver than gold, right? That's one. Fuel, obviously, right? Because especially if you're a farmer, because the whole farm runs on fuel, right? Food, so that if the system breaks, you have food, and don't have to worry about getting to the food store and having a fight like they did over toilet paper. You know, it's like when that happened, I just kind of looked at, you know, my 5 years of toilet paper being stored and said, no problem here.
Yeah.
So, but the real issue is Americans have not experienced when their currency has collapsed for a very, very long time.
Because, JC, you can have this discussion with the most astute financial advisors in this country or in your community that you know, and they're like oblivious to this is potentially going to happen. So then, then everybody looks on it like, that's just JC Cole trying to scare people.
Yeah, it's normalcy bias, you know, and you keep on going, listen, if the electricity gets turned off, so does the banks. What are you going to do? You know, and there's just a bunch of different things. So what happened when the Soviet Union collapsed? Then the management system that basically created the Soviet ruble collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
So there was the corporation that issued the currency is no longer there. It's like Enron stock. Well, Enron's not here, so the stock is worthless, right? Well, we could face that also. Who creates, you know, who controls our currency? And it turns out that it's basically this band of private bankers known as the Federal Reserve Board. Yeah, and if they collapse, what happens to the currency? Who issued it?
This sounds so elementary, but it's my own personal resolve in that, you know, I have gold and silver, but it's on the hoof. And I can sell, I can trade anybody, I can barter anybody any day for something to eat. The caveat in all of that is that I have to be able to feed the critters I have to keep them alive. It's that elementary.
Yes, and that's where the complexity of our supply chain has basically lulled us into, seduced us into convenience.
Right.
Yeah, you know, 100 years ago, you would have the feed because you would be in control of the feed for those animals.
Yeah. Well, and the other part of it is I think about is if this actually happens, all these corn farmers around me that have been selling corn that ultimately goes to China or goes to an ethanol plant or whatever the case may be, they're going to look for something to eat their corn.
Yes. Yeah. And unfortunately, the majority of even our farmers, we went to what we'd call a just-in-time delivery just-in-time inventory. So, you know, our tractor broke And it used to be that you could get the part within 2 days. Well, it's been down for a month and a half right now. We're still waiting for the part.
I'm looking at an Oliver right over there, a 1972 Oliver, first tractor I ever drove, hasn't started in a month and a half because starter's out.
Yep. And we, in our older days, right, we were able to like we rewire that thing and a couple of new magnet contacts, and that would be working fine, right? But we lost that skill.
Yeah,
Well, we didn't lose it totally yet.
even just a screwdriver to jump across the two posts on the starter. You can't even do that anymore. All
Yeah.
right, takeaway. We need our takeaway here today, JC.
Well, I would say, you know, obviously we have major changes coming, and that you want to prepare as best as possible. So how many tools can you put in your toolbox, right? And one is definitely diesel, gold, silver, physical cash, food, all the things you need to live, right? And plus again, the manuals, like keep on telling you know, when technology fails. What is our digital currency? It's a technology.
Why do you keep leaving pork bellies out of the preparation part? I don't understand that. That's JC Cole. I'm Trent Luce.
Oh, that.
Absolutely. You might have missed last week. JC was telling us that you can get a tablet for $40 on a Black Friday sale. You can save a lot of information and how-to manuals on those tablets. We will pick it up right there in the second half of JC Cole today on Rural Routes. I want to remind you, I mentioned at the beginning, the Wall of Honor. We're here today thanks, and we have the freedoms that we do enjoy thanks to the men and women who have protected our freedoms in the name of the United States military. We say thank you with thewalloofhonor.org. Go check it out today. Let me know what you think. Thewalloofhonor.org. Back with more after this. Welcome back, everyone. Trent Luce alongside JC Cole. Roll route the program. Five below. I just got a, during the break, JC, I got a text with a bunch of pictures of the available energy and cost all across the country. And the Southwest Power Pool, which is where I get my electricity from, we are sitting in better shape than anybody else thanks to Wyoming and North Dakota coal. You're in trouble. I hate to tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. And remember, you need a little bit of electricity to run your heating machines.
Yeah,
not
a
even
little.
oil or natural gas or propane. They still take a little bit of electricity, and you can find that uninterrupted power supply for your heater. So you can actually have a little bit of a backup there just so it keeps the heat moving.
How much heat is generated by tying four mules on a wheel and just having them walk in a circle? Can I keep my house heated that way?
Yeah, that might work. I'm just a little short on mules.
I'm not. I'm well staffed.
Yeah, we have thoroughbreds over here, and they don't go around in a circle real well.
They go around in a big circle fast.
Exactly. Right. So I wanted to jump into one of our favorite things, and that's what happened this week in history that is of significance.
I'm
Okay.
Ready.
Because it'll lead into the currency issue. So November 29th, 1961,
JFK.
Allen Dulles, the head of the CIA, the director of the CIA, resigns for the failure of the Bay of Pigs invasion. Well, actually, he got fired by JFK. Right.
Saw that coming.
So exactly 2 years later, to the day, November 29th, 1963, LBJ.
He no longer exists.
Yes. LBJ, who was the man who benefited the most from JFK passing away, LBJ sets up the Warren Commission to investigate who assassinated JFK. And he names Allen Dulles as the person in charge of the investigation, the very person who JFK fired. You think that's a conflict of interest?
Not only that, it's his exact day 2 years later.
And not saying that November 29th, 1963 is an 11-11-9. That's just a coincidence. Okay, so getting right into it. Now, the CIA came up with the psychological operations, PSYOP, called conspiracy theorists, so that people would stop doubting the official narrative of the JFK assassination. So anybody who believes conspiracy theory, right, and uses that to shut off their deductive reasoning has been properly programmed by the CIA. You've been brainwashed, right? Okay, now let's walk back a little bit. Who is Alan Dulles? He was in the OSS, and he was in charge of the project called Project Operation Paperclip, or Project Paperclip, where he took certain Nazis, deleted that they were Nazis, and brought them into the United States as German scientists. Officially, there are something like 2,000 that came in, and most famous is Wernher von Braun, who was the beginner, the head of NASA. But unofficially, it's rumored that 20 to 30,000 Nazis came into the United States and got put throughout our corporations, including the pharmaceuticals. Now, what did Nazis do during World War II? They experimented medically on people. See any medical experimentations taking place at this moment?
Well, and to add one step farther, there's one of those global pharmaceutical companies that financed the Nazis when they were in place and still a very prominent part of every aspect of agriculture and aspirin sales in the world.
That's true. And if you look at their insignia, you can see the swastika.
I know.
Hidden in plain sight. So what did JFK apparently took on everybody. I mean, you know, he took on the CIA, the mafia. He bit off, looks like, a little more than he could chew. But he signed an executive order, 11111, that made silver certificates. In other words, the U.S. government had about $5 billion worth of silver in 1960, and he made another currency backed by and exchangeable for silver for the United States. And that ran direct in competition to the Federal Reserve note, which was a debt note that you could not exchange for gold or silver. So in other words, he put in place a quality currency that people would have belief in. And as soon as he was assassinated, LBJ removed that executive order. So one of the things Kennedy was doing was trying to put us back on a sound money system. And it's in the Constitution. Our money shall be gold and silver. Period.
JC, back in the early 2000s, and this is all well documented, even in Bobby Kennedy's book, I was taking him to task for what he was doing and believed that he was just very wrong. And in many regards, he was. But in that 5-year period when we were juxtaposing each other, I had the complete thought, I think most people do, and I think this is where you're going, is that the Kennedys are part of the aristocracy. They are the royal family of the U.S. They are the elite of the elite. And the more time passes, the more information that comes out like this, they came from a line of wealthy individuals. Well, their dad became wealthy, bootlegging something. And yet they were taking on the system. And that flies in the face of everything that we have been imprinted to believe.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting thing. Yes, the Kennedys are one of the bloodlines. But we didn't say that all the bloodlines are against humanity.
Mm-hmm.
right? And honestly, you know, so the Kennedys would be coming from either Scotland or Ireland, you know, because it was, you know, they were very close in England. So they might truly be the lineage of King Arthur. I mean, it goes back that far. We don't know, but to assume that all of the bloodlines are against humanity, I think is a poor assumption. And to also the opposite, to assume none of the bloodlines are satanic is in direct violation of the evidence we're seeing. Some of them are satanic.
You're more blind than Helen Keller ever was, if you believe that to be true.
Yeah, it's like so we're in this battle. I think that some of the bloodlines are now being exposed to basically crimes against humanity and their control over the financial system for 1,000 years.
In all fairness, I had this notion today that we should talk about currency, which we did in the first half of this program, with no knowledge whatsoever that there was a November 29 tie to the currency fiat fiasco.
Right.
Wow.
That's your intuitive. Yes, that's your your clairvoyance kicking in, just not consciously.
Yeah. Well, most things I do unconsciously are better.
Sometimes
you don't overthink sometimes. Them.
So one of the things that's coming up and very concerning is this railway strike, because it's one of the most efficient ways to move cargo, as we know. And you know, you look at the ways to really move bulk. One is by barge, and that's being that's in trouble. And the other one is by rail, and that. If we have and then of course the third is by truck. So our trucking system is already strained. And if the rail system goes on strike, that will overload our trucking system, and we may not get certain things that we need. And if you remember, we discussed how important chlorine is, or actually calcium, what is it? Calcium hypochlorite or fuel shock. Right? Because if that doesn't get delivered to the big cities, you're not going to be able to sanitize the water system. And we said 87% of Americans are on municipal water. And if they can't get the chemicals to kill the germs in the water, we're going to have a very sick inner cities, of which, by the way, we already do because of the fentanyl invasion.
Yeah, the severity of that is just, it's hard to even grasp.
Right. So for us as preppers, you know, if I recall, a 5-gallon drum of pool shock without any of the fungicides in it, just pool shock, about 70% pure chlorine, is about $150. And boy, that's one very inexpensive insurance policy right there.
Yeah, and all of these things, from electricity to pool shock to food, it isn't necessarily what it's going to cost you. It's whether you can get them or not.
That part's true, and that's what happened. That's what was my awakening. That's what my strength was, because when the Soviet supply chain collapsed, it didn't matter that I had a lot of dollars, right? I couldn't find it. You know,
right.
If there's no gasoline, it doesn't matter what you pay for. There's no gasoline. You know, it's like.
Roll route. We will fire the gas engine up one more time today when we get back with that after this. When we talk about all of these regional aspects, I got to tell you that's what I like about the Certified Piedmontese system. It is a regional production system. The cattle come from the Great Plains of America. They're harvested in the Great Plains, and they are sold from the Great Plains. Now, they may be shipped outside of the Great Plains, but that's the buyer's choice. You need to be a part of a system like this that is very regional in its aspect and pays the producer properly. Our calves are now coming on 2 weeks. Friday will be 2 weeks that we weaned our calves. Wait a minute. I'm knocking on wood. They look fantastic. We're going to keep them six and ship them off into the system and get a $180 premium over market price. Details about your involvement at LoneCreekCattleCo.com. Welcome back. Trent Luce alongside J.C. Cole, joining us from an undisclosed location in a cold room in New Jersey.
Where you yes.
Put a fire stove. Be careful with your fire stoves. My neighbor house caught on fire this past week at 10 o'clock at night because his fire stove, his wood stove got a little too
that's
hot.
That's a maintenance issue. You better, you know, actually, that was another prepping thing. I just went to Tractor Supply a couple of years ago and bought a chimney sweep, right? Because, when I was in Latvia, we heated with wood and we heated with pellets and we heated with oil. And so we had to clean the, and the Latvians didn't have hardwoods. They had softwoods, which just means that you had a creosote buildup quicker. And we had to clean the chimney, twice a year easily.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get any, and I actually got a chimney fire in a metal pipe. It was amazing.
They're hot.
To watch. Yeah. Fortunately, we were home when it happened, and we were able to put it out. But boy, I'll tell you, that thing started to heat up red, the metal, and start to melt the metal. That's how hot it can get. Because you actually create almost like a vortex of air coming through.
Well, that quickly puts it at above 1,400 degrees.
Yeah. Where I was watching the metal, there was a small hole in the pipe and it started to suck in air, and the creosote had caught on fire, which just started to create a vortex up the pipe. And right where that hole was, that thing started to glow red. Mm-hmm. And I realized we had a serious problem. Fortunately, I was able to block the hole and suffocate the whole fire. Right.
Well, the good news is you didn't need to go anywhere to get a forge. You had a forge right in your home.
There we go. Yes. And so you got to be really careful about those things. And of course, if you use some forms of alternative heating, you got to be careful with your carbon monoxide. So a $10 alarm is a smart investment. Yeah. And speaking of smart investments, I see over your left shoulder the book Survival Theory by Jonathan Hollerman.
Correct.
Right on your bookcase, which I highly recommend. And you can get it in Audible for those who are too busy to read. So while you're on the tractor splitting wood, you can listen to all these things, which is one of the reasons I can take in so much information.
Which means that when I'm on the tractor, I don't like to listen to anything. My radio doesn't work anymore because my tractors are all so old that I have to pay attention to what I hear because I'm going to hear a problem. I won't hear a problem as quick as I should hear the problem if I'm listening to one of your books on tape.
But you still can hear the problem or you feel the problem when you're on the tractor. And it's called multitasking.
Did you just say I made an excuse? Is that what you just said?
I did hear the violin playing.
I thought you were going to comment on my Angola prison chuck wagon.
No, your Angola rodeo statue. Yeah. No.
Made by an inmate at Louisiana State Penitentiary. He did a phenomenal job.
Right. Very nice.
But I went there 4 years in a row.
I do have some manual labor. I do on the farm. And that's here in New Jersey, we have so much trees and landscaping that it's a very viable business. And the guys have to pay to bring the wood to the dump to throw it out. That's how stupid the system is they're throwing out hundreds of tons of wood at the dump and paying for it.
Paying to get rid of it.
So they deliver it to my place for free.
Yeah.
But it's in, anywhere from 8 to 20 foot sections. Right. So I have to go out there with a chainsaw and cut it up. So I actually have my shooting ear protection on while I have the chainsaw on, and I'm listening to things like Jonathan Holloman, Survival, mm-hmm. while I have the chainsaw running.
John Boland, my other friend, he has the same agreement with a local landscaper. And he had to shut him down because his wood pile was outpacing what he could handle. It's just amazing to me that we waste that much.
Same here. I mean, I only have one small firm, and I already have enough wood cut. I mean, logs on the property for 5 years, and we still have probably five acres of woods, maybe a little bit more. Of which we have our own ash trees. I think I counted about 20 of them that are dead.
Yeah.
So I'm leaving them, as you say, on the hoof or on the stump to dry naturally. So they're ready to burn nicely.
I see this all the time in my country. People clean out an area, or they clear some brush in a corner of a field or whatever the case may be. And then they light the thing on fire. And I'm like, why are you wasting BTUs? I just don't understand it.
No, well, I think it really comes down to efficiency. A lot of it comes down to our billable hours. If you look, you know, the average repair, if you go to a shop, is maybe $100 an hour. Okay. Right. So when you actually look at how much it costs per hour for me to cut wood, it might be more like $5 an hour for me, you know. And so, but I realized that the cost of energy is going to go skyrocketing, that was my hedge, and that I put the entire house on a heating system, on a wood heating system. And so if oil does go to like $20 a gallon, we don't have to, wood will become much more cost effective. And so in my plan, it was also to heat greenhouses with wood.
Oh, that may, how that, are you still doing that?
Well, I got the greenhouse up, but I didn't get it into production. But yes, I mean, that's the whole plan to have.
Why would you not have it in production?
There was an employee strike. Me. Right. We're still in negotiations.
You don't have to yet. That's what I just heard you say. You don't have to have the greenhouse going yet.
It basically said, I just have one more thing to do is to run a greenhouse while I'm doing everything, I'm trying to create a solution for food security for the nation.
Now we're talking my language. I understand now.
Right. And so you go, you know, well, why aren't you repairing your tractor? Because I'm doing other things of much higher significance at the moment. Right. Yeah. But, right. But imagine having like five greenhouses, putting in a pretty much a simple hydroponic system, which uses very little electricity, if it's simple, and you're heating with wood, right? And so you can actually grow, you know, 12 months of the year. That's what we should be doing. We should be making small farms and sustainable. And unfortunately, the globalists have captured the word sustainable. Their version is it sustains their cash flow by having a monopoly. My version is it's in harmony with the earth, in that it will keep on going and going and going. Yeah.
Yeah, I cannot believe we allow, and we continue to do that, JC. We allow people to hijack terms like sustainability. I remember the first time, it was the late 1990s, I think, when I was really starting to learn what the internet was. And the word sustainable was the most commonly used word on the internet.
Yeah, they hijacked organic.
To be
true. Yeah, certified organic is not even close to real organic, right? They hijacked, of course, they're using the assault weapon, that, you know, the assault rifle. And they're like, wait a minute, assault is a verb. How can you make it a noun? And you can assault people with a shoe. Do we have assault shoes? And so again,
that's not funny. I actually know a guy that went to prison because as a rancher, he was protecting his property in New Mexico. And they said that his spur on his boot was an assault weapon.
Right. Assault is a terminology in crime.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, and they say, oh, it's an AR, assault rifle. No, that was for the maker of the first AR.
Armalite, wasn't that his name?
Yeah, it was Armalite rifle. Yeah. And we've been being brainwashed by a cabal that is trying to take over the country and actually making good progress. They captured our education system. They captured our financial system, which we just talked about. They're capturing our food system. I mean, look at this. 90% of all the processed food is controlled by 10 corporations. Okay, and if you look behind the scenes of those 10 corporations, two financial institutions control them.
Right.
Yeah. We're dealing with a massive mafia. And fortunately, we're waking up.
In closing, J.C. Cole reminds us that gold, silver, fuel, and pork bellies is how you protect yourself for the future.
And chicken eggs.
And chicken eggs. I never leave out the chicken eggs. We've journeyed down the road connecting food producers to food consumers. For J.C. Cole, I'm Trent Lewis. Both of us reminding you that all roads do indeed lead to a rural route with a chainsaw running somewhere. Let's take a moment and talk about Protect the Harvest. Every week, you got this Giving Tuesday, and I think of it on Wednesday. That's not very good. The moral of the story is that our rights are eroding left and right, and the only way we maintain a free and fed America is if we continue our property rights to the ultimate. I mean, that's where it's at. That's where the cookie crumbles. And you can go to the website, protecttheharvest.com, and this is all about empowering yourself to take this country back, starting at the local level and then expanding it from then on. Get involved in the community. Don't let the animal rights community come in and infiltrate your system. That's exactly what's happened. Nobody, absolutely nobody, does a better job of keeping you up to speed with all of that. Even look at the HISA, Horse Inspection Safety Act. It's all laid out at the website, protecttheharvest.com, for a free and fed America.